All right, ready?
Ready? Yes.
Ready? Ready? This is episode 39 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and I asked my playgroup if I could play Crested Sunbear as my commander, even though it's not legendary. They said, nay.
And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle, and I'm kind of like Dryad of the Elysian Grove. I'm kind of chubby, but I do what I do so good you won't care.
Is he kind of chubby?
He is a little bit.
I don't know if I looked at the artwork that
much. Maybe I looked a little too close.
Please listen carefully.
Now, this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander. Just a quick note, if you're looking to support the podcast, please hop on over to the comment section so that you can leave a comment on our podcast and whatever source you're listening to. Like, subscribe, all those good things. Also, if you're looking to pick up any singles or sealed product, please hop on over to our website at guardianprojectpodcast.com and use our TCG player affiliate link. We would really greatly appreciate the support.
And we also launched our Patreon this last week, and we want to thank all of you who signed up to support us. If you like what we do and you want to support, you can head over to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and support us for as little as $1 a month. We've got some fun rewards like a playset of our tokens or having your commander featured as the commander of the week or joining us as a guest host on the show.
Whoop, whoop.
All the proceeds are going back to the show to help us produce more content for you. What's cool on the agenda this week?
On the agenda, we're going to talk about the banner restricted announcement that came out on Monday. We're going to talk about the mystery booster foils that were announced earlier.
Yeah, it was at the end of, I think it was last Friday they were announced. Mm-hmm. So obviously after our recording,
we're going to take a look back at Theros Beyond Death and look at some cards and how they performed, over the course of their release. Did they do good? Did they do bad? Let's talk about it.
Yeah. How they've been performing in our commander decks for sure.
We're going to do a pack one, pick one with packs donated by our generous fan Cube Draft.
And then Commander of the Week.
Commander of the Week. What's Commander of the Week this week?
Voril of the Hullclade.
Ooh.
Counters. Simic Counters.
He's one of the characters featured in our art.
It is the character on the right. It was one of the characters I asked to be in it. Like, mm-hmm. Can you make this one on the right? Voril? He's got all the abs.
He does. He has so many abs. It's ridiculous.
So we had a banned and restricted announcement.
We sure did.
On Monday. And there was kind of a lot. Right, so
yeah, spread out a bunch of different formats.
Yeah, and Brawl, Golos, Tireless Pilgrim is banned.
That's okay.
It's okay. I mean, it was a very strong deck, but it just felt like you saw Golos and you go, okay, Field of the Dead and Agent of Treachery is just, it's like, it's coming.
Yep,
it's here. It is. Historic, if that's still a format that people play.
Yep.
The following cards were moved from suspended to banned. Oko, Thief of Crowns, Once Upon a Time, and Veil of Summer.
Gone forever.
Goodbye. Okay. In historic.
Yeah.
And then suspended to legal, Field of the Dead.
That's right. It's back.
It's not so bad.
No. I mean, you can run Golos Fires, I guess Golos Field now again in
sure.
historic.
Why not? Legacy Underworld Breach is banned.
Yeah. Cards broke.
Yeah, and then Modern Once Upon a Time is banned.
So that means Once Upon a Time is not legal in the big three formats anymore of Standard, Modern, and Pioneer. I love that card, though.
It was very flavorful. I just wish that like Happily Ever After was as strong as Once Upon a Time. Like the story starts out strong and then it ends strong, but Happily Ever After is just way too difficult to make happen.
Just like a story. I mean, there's a lot of build up that you have to
do. You never finish, like, right? It's like me reading a book, like you get halfway through and then you never finish it. It was like Once Upon a Time. I don't know how that book ended.
It's like if someone has Once Upon Happily Ever After out and they don't win, is the correct response the end question mark?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
They never end it.
So. Right. The end.
Me and the War of the Spark Forsaken book. I've read three chapters of, and Coyle is like, I finished it. I'd like to talk to you about it.
Yeah. Someone DM me on Twitter so that I can talk to somebody about this book. I want to talk to somebody.
I got it back in November when it came out. I had a work flight, but I was in a class, so I had to do some homework on the flight, and mm-hmm. then I never finished the book.
Yeah, I got it like 2 months after and finished it.
In like a week, though.
It was
just
audio
with your driving,
yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
It was very fast.
I listened so good to that book.
So they said Golos, the decks were about 10% of the field.
Yeah.
So it was just too much. It made Golos twice as popular as the next most popular commander. And it said, while this isn't inherently problematic, Golos's five-color identity also circumvents deck building restrictions. So
it's banned. That's very true.
Lots of stuff in Historic. Said the four cards were suspended from the format for having problematic win rates and reducing diversity. We now have updates to those suspensions. because of this being the first digital nature of Historic and its unique approach to adding card content, it said, when possible, to introduce answers to problematic cards rather than ban them is their philosophy. In this case, Field of the Dead, we are introducing some new answers with Historic Anthology 2, including Ghost Quarter and Goblin Rune Blaster. But Oko, Veil of Summer, and Once Upon a Time are powerful cards that are difficult to interact with. And observing the health of the format with and without them, they decided to upgrade them to bans. So
I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Other than Once Upon a Time, bring it back every format. Let's go.
Yeah. So for Modern, Once Upon a Time has become the most played card. It said become one of the most played cards in Modern, contributing to several of the most popular and highest winning decks. The consistency provided by Once Upon a Time allows those decks to more reliably enact their early game plan compared to other archetypes.
Yeah, I honestly think if the old Mulligan rule was still in play, that Once Upon a Time would not be banned. But with the London Mulligan, it's so easy to just... I understand why.
Remember when Peel Pull thought that the Neoform deck was going to be like tier one with the new Mulligan rule, and then it wasn't.
I mean, maybe people just haven't built it right yet.
Yeah, they definitely haven't. yeah, and it said in order to facilitate more varied gameplay and mitigate future risk, Once Upon a Time is banned. Legacy, which I do not know. I'll qualify this with
sure.
I don't play Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But it said since the release of Theros Beyond Death, they've watched the evolution of combo decks that revolve around Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond, and Brain Freeze. In many cases, they'd allow a new breakout combo, but as these decks were refined, it became clear from the rising win rate that Underworld Breach's interaction with Lion's Eye Diamond is problematic, rather than allowing these decks to become a large part of the competitive metagame before likely still needing to make a change in the future. They're banning Underworld Breach now.
Yep.
So I lost to Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond combo in Commander 2 weeks ago with wheels. I had no idea what was actually happening. And then it just clicked. I was like, wait, they're going to discard their hand. Then what are they going to do? Oh, they're going to cast Wheel of Fortune again from their graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to Lion's Eye Diamond. And then they're going to cast this card again. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's really good.
It was cool to lose to once, but I can understand, obviously, if people are losing to this consistently that quickly.
Sure.
That's probably very frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine that for sure.
But
I mean, it's Legacy. It's fine. Just put it back.
Yeah. So, and then there is an announcement about Pioneer. It says, generally, we are happy with how the Pioneer metagame has been playing out over the past several weeks. We saw tremendous diversity across the top decks. However, we are aware of community concern about some of the new combos that broke out around the time of the Players Tour, including Dimir Inverter, Lotus Breach, and Heliod Walking Ballista.
Yep.
In general, we're okay with combos having a presence, but it is certainly possible to have combos that are too strong or too prevalent. Combo decks can be unhealthy in large doses, especially if they're difficult to deal with. It says, across the last 2 weeks of leagues, Dimir Inverter has had a 49% non-mirror match rate win rate. And has an unfavorable matchup against 5 of the other 10 most played decks.
Yep.
That win rate has been drifting down over time since Players Tour. Lotus Breach decks have been at an even lower rate with unfavorable matchups against most of the other top decks. And it says, this is especially true post-sideboard where most of the decks have access to Damping Sphere. Not dampening.
Damping.
Which... took a long time to say damping.
Makes things wet. It's just damping.
Yep. And the announcement further says the decks using the Heliod Ballista combo have yet to prove themselves consistently in competitive tournaments and aren't showing up at play rates we consider problematic. So
yeah, it's a 2-card combo. You won't always have it in your hand.
Yeah. In Commander, though, that's real strong. But I haven't even seen it happen once yet, which is disappointing.
I haven't seen anyone play the deck, but I imagine it's really easy to put that. I mean, White has access to artifact tutors, so
yeah,
I don't know. A lot of that. I mean, I'm sure someone's got it. Maybe we'll see it
this weekend. I think we just at Magic Fest Detroit. Mm-hmm. If it's not canceled due to coronavirus, we've got how many days? 3 days? 2 days? It's Friday. Today's Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday.
We'll see. Yesterday, some folks were asking on Twitter, Channel Fireball, and they said they're monitoring it for the most recent, you know, information. So if it's canceled, I wouldn't be surprised, in all honesty. But, right. You know, we're still deciding on what the plan is. But hopefully, I mean, I'd like to go down there for a day.
It would be nice.
So
it's always fun. So,
yeah. Mystery booster foils.
Oh, okay. So these
mystery I like me some foils. Koya's not a big foil person, but if he opens a foil, I'll buy a foil.
I like me some value.
I'll trade a foil.
Sure.
Except your Lazav. Because Koya has Lazav the Multifarious and won't give it to me.
It's mine.
For my Lazav the Multifarious deck.
It's my Lazav the Multifarious. I opened that at pre-release, and it's not even the stamped version. So it's like, it's near. I opened it in my Demir pre-release.
Yeah.
You should appreciate that. Guilds of Ravnica.
I like
you really game. Want it from me, though.
I know. I've only asked him every week, I think, for a few months now.
So, yeah. As you know, Andy loves foils. I like selling foils. So,
I mean, it's the perfect combination of people.
It's great.
You complete me.
Aw.
So, Wizards of the Coast released what the foil... sheet was going to be. It's all cut from one sheet.
We did tweet that out last week, so there is a link already on our Twitter.
But MTG Goldfish actually put out a list of how expensive these cards currently are in foil, so that we can see what kind of value we're looking in this foil slot. We know that the convention version of the Mystery Boosters had the playtest cards. We're getting these foils. There was some concern that the WPN version of these booster boxes wouldn't have the same value because the playtest cards actually are proving to be pretty valuable. These cards are going to be playable in your format without breaking any rules. And some of them have some great value. So number one on the list is a card I recently got rid of in non-foil because of how expensive it has become lately. And that's Send Triplets, which is currently sitting at $134 in foil.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy to get a foil card that everyone's going to spot removal as soon as you put it on the board because they hate it and they don't want you to see their hand.
Yeah.
It's such a good deck, though.
Cast Send Triplets 3 times one game, you never saw someone's hand.
And then I switched it out for a Loro, and the deck's never been better.
Yeah, yeah. Number two is Minamo, School at Water's Edge at... around $86. I run this in 3 commander decks. Actually, in the commander deck I'm going to talk about tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, for 1 blue, you can untap target legendary permanent. It's really good when you need your commander that taps to do something.
Yeah. I know this was... I literally just talked about the deck before we started the episode, and I can't remember the guy's name anymore. Mono blue.
Oh, RFX. Arkham Dagson.
Arkham Dagson. This is a really, 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 really... important card to have in Arkham Dagson, especially now that Paradox Engine is banned, since he does have the tap ability. So now they have it in foil. Well, they've had it in foil before, but they're reprinting it in foil. I guess it's important to note that none of these cards are new to foil, so they are reprints, but they'll have the nice little
breaking news. The safety of Magic Fest attendees is important to us, and we have been monitoring the evolving public health situation closely. Based on additional guidance from government and public health officials, MTG Detroit, MTG Sao Paulo, MTG Louisville, and MTG Palm Beach are canceled. So we are not going to be there this weekend, everyone. We are very sad, actually.
Let's just go to Cobo Hall and play Magic outside the doors.
We're just going to go sit downtown Detroit and do nothing.
They probably have like food trucks and stuff, which would probably be an awful idea.
There's a lot of
idea.
Delicious restaurants down there, though.
Yeah, the restaurants are great.
Okay. Well, there's that update. So we won't see a bunch of you this weekend, unfortunately.
So we're going to do the rest of this podcast as depressed people.
No.
No.
No, there's value coming next week.
There's more value. Okay, so next on the list, we have Scourge of the Throne. 5/5 dragon. with flying for 4 and a red as dethrone. So when it does damage to the player with the highest life total, put a +1/+1 counter on it. And he says when Scourge of the Throne attacks for the first time each turn, if it's attacking the player with the most life or tied for most life, untap all attacking creatures. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase. So this was printed in Conspiracy at Mythic level, which is why it's at almost an $80 value in foil.
Mythic rarity or level?
Mythic, both.
Levels.
Yeah.
Magic has levels.
So many levels. So it's Mythic rarity in the Conspiracy, which was not a very opened set, low print run. So that's why that card has value. Played in Ilharg, the Raised Boar, or Purphoros.
Marchesa.
Yeah, Queen Marchesa. Dethrone. Any of the dethrones. Extra combat stuff. It's a little expensive to get out, so you want to cheat it out as much as you can.
And then give it haste somehow.
Throw some haste at it. Hey, Purphoros does both of those things.
Yeah.
Ilharg comes into tapped and attacking, but it doesn't attack, so it doesn't get the attack trigger because I cheated that card in my Ilharg deck, apparently.
The next card, Intruder Alarm, foil. For 2 and blue, creatures don't untap during their controller's untap steps. Whenever a creature comes in, untap all creatures. Right now is at $72. It actually has two printings, so one from 8th edition and one from Stronghold. And apparently this one is coming back as a white border?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying?
Some of these... For your white border.
Is that just this image, or is it really going to be foil white border?
I'm pretty sure they're being printed in the same printing that they were originally printed.
But 8th edition foils were in black border.
Only the foils were in black border?
Yes.
And then the non-foils were in white border?
Correct.
Well, I have no idea then.
Yes, I have a foil for my commander deck from a card. I feel like it's a really old card, but I bought it in foil. Trade Routes? I think Trade Routes was from 7th edition, maybe? 7th edition? And it's either 7th or 8th. And the foils from those sets come in black border, not white border.
That's odd to me. But you're right. I'm looking it up on the Google Images right now. Yeah, it's black border and foil.
Yeah, so they're black border. Don't you lie to me. I wouldn't want this if it was a white border foil. That would hurt me.
Oh, I want it so bad. I'm so less excited about it now. Next on the list, we have Reaper King. Reaper King just got, as we discussed a little bit before the episode started, just got a reprint in promo.
Yeah, it was a secret layer drop. One of the first secret layer drops.
So check out the secret layer.
You can't buy it, though. You can't buy it.
You can't buy it anymore.
Yeah. Teferi's Puzzle Box. This is a pretty good card for the Locust God.
Super good.
Four colorless. Well, four generic. At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player puts the cards in their hand on the bottom of their library in any order and then draws that many. So before you draw your card, you put all your cards on bottom and draw that many, and then you draw your card for the turn. So with decks that want to draw cards and get value off of every time you draw, like maybe having a Smothering Tithe out with this or having a Locust God with this, every time you or someone draws a card, right, it can potentially generate you value.
For sure.
It's great with a Consecrated Sphinx out on your battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, are you going to draw 6? Cool, I'm going to draw 12.
That's a lot of value.
At $52 right now in foil, though, so that's crazy.
All right, let's just cover the ones that are over $50 because this is a really long list. Okay, Xur's Weirdling.
These are all over $50, so let's just read them. Xur's Weirdling, Helix Pinnacle.
Xur's Weirdling is, Helix Pinnacle is amazing. I want that. It's mono green alternate win condition.
Yeah, but it has shrouds. You can't even double it.
I'm okay. You can double it as long as it's a passive effect that's doubling it. You can't Vorrel of the Hulklate it.
I cannot.
Xur's Weirdling can lock everyone out of games. You pay 2 lives and have someone discard a card rather than draw it. Which is cool.
Yeah. Weirding.
Weirding. Not Weirdling.
Not Weirdling.
I thought it was Weirdling.
It would be, though, his Weirdling with the one eye.
Yeah.
This artwork is like, look at my eye.
Look at my eye.
Helix Pinnacle. Shroud. For 1 green, pay X, put a tower counter on Helix Pinnacle. If you have 100 counters on Helix Pinnacle, you win.
Yeah.
It would be very good in Vorrel if this card didn't have Shroud.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's still... Maybe it's an alternate win con you want to slip into, like, Peer and Toothy or something.
Anything that can make infinite mana in green. You can just play it.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Crufix, I think, is a deck that I would want to build one day and throw that in there.
Yeah.
And then the last card over $50 currently is Amulet of Vigor. One mana artifact says whenever a permanent enters the battlefield tapped and under your control, untap it.
Yeah.
So that card is played in Titan in Modern. So that's why it sees that price. People are looking for four copies of it. There's actually also another card, Sakura Tribe Scout, which you can tap and put a land into play. It's a common from Kamigawa that is $40 in foil for the same
reason.
Really? Yeah.
I had no idea that that card was that expensive.
Yeah, I say for the same reason people want four foils to foil out their Modern deck for Amulet Titan. So, yeah. Cool stuff. Really good cards being printed here. I think so if you took the entire foil sheet, the price is approximately $2,000.
Wow. That's
I mean, that's if you get every single, it's 121 cards. So the sheet is 121 cards total. So yeah.
Interesting. You want to talk about some cards from Theros Beyond Death and how they've been playing in Commander?
Yeah, let's return to the Theros Beyond Death.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about cards that have really in like three categories. So cards that have that we feel are overperforming or performing as we anticipated or perhaps underperforming when we thought they might have done really well.
Right.
I'll start out with the first one. this was played against me and I saw the power of this card. Axe of Agonis, which I didn't know if it was going to be good in Commander. We know it's good in Dredge in Modern. So it is a 4/2 for 3 red-red that says when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand and draw 3 cards. But it has Escape for red-red and exiling 8 other cards from your graveyard. And it escapes with a +1/+1 counter on it to make it a 5/3. So I saw this card working really well in the Chainer Nightmare Adept deck with an Altar of Dementia out. So I had this played against me. Altar of Dementia is an artifact that says sacrifice a creature and the target player puts a number of cards from their library into their graveyard, so they're milling cards equal to the power of the creature. So they were really just self-milling and then being able to either cast something else utilizing Chainer's ability, or they would just recast the Axe and get all the stuff into their graveyard into a ginormous Living Death or, you know, something else. So I thought this card did a lot more work, but maybe it's just because I've seen it a few times in a deck that was solely dedicated to focusing on things that it cared about, I guess.
For sure.
It probably doesn't slot into many decks just like, oh, you go throw it in and it's going to work. It's not going to work in everything.
No, it doesn't.
It's real specific, but it is crazy in the ones that I've seen it played in.
Yeah. A couple other cards that I think are seeing just specifically huge play in Chainer and are having good value. Obviously, Underworld Breach. Underworld Breach is a really good card.
Yeah.
You want to run that a lot. I've also seen Kroxa do really, really well because when you escape Kroxa, you get the Enter the Battlefield effect, and with Chainer out, it gains haste, and its Enter the Battlefield effect and its attack trigger are actually the same thing. So you're going to make people discard 2 cards when it enters and attacks. So those 2 cards are also overperforming. There is one card I think people should be playing more in Chainer that I haven't seen, and that's Annex, Hardened in the Forge. It actually, in a black-red reanimator deck, acts a lot like Pawn of Ulamog. It's a 1 black-black. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, create a 0/1 Eldrazi spawn that says sacrifice it for 1. But a lot of people are running Ashnod's Altar in a deck like that anyways. So you sack it and you sack the token that it creates. And you have 4 colorless mana to cast more spells, activate your Nim Death Mantle, stuff like that. So I think if you are playing Chainer, you should consider also running Annex, Hardened in the Forge.
Yeah. Another card that I think is overperforming is Nightlia, Keen-Eyed. And this fits into pretty much anything that cares about creatures.
Yeah.
So for 3 and a green, I know we've talked about all these gods. It's been a minute since we talked about them, and you may not be playing them. It's a 5/6 indestructible with if your devotion is less than 5, she's not a creature. And Nylea has creature spells you cast cost 1 generic less to cast, but has an activated ability of 2 generic and a green, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature, you can put it in your hand. Otherwise, you may put it into your graveyard. This card has drawn me like 5 or 6 cards a game every time I've played it. Now I've been playing it in my Nikia of the old ways deck. Mm-hmm. And so granted my mana's doubled. So right, I have a lot more mana to throw into it.
Sure.
But just having a 5/6 blocker that makes your creatures cost less is really great.
Yeah.
And then something to do with your mana.
For sure. And if you're not playing like a 100% Gitrog deck or something, it's actually super good to activate its ability, throw lands into your graveyard, get the draw triggers from Gitrog, activate it for the dredge cards that are in your graveyard if that's what you're doing with it. But to kind of use up all your extra mana if you're playing a lot of lands. If you're not playing 100% Gitrog, you're going to get land flooded at some point. Nylea is a good way to filter the top of your deck and get some card draw for that.
Yeah. Let's do a card that's performing just as we thought it would. Nyxbloom Ancient.
Yeah.
So Nyxbloom Ancient is a 5/5 for 4 green, green, green. So expensive, CMC-wise, for a trample 5/5 elemental that has, if you tap a permanent for mana, it produces 3 times as much as that as much mana as it would produce.
Oh, yeah.
So we already knew it was going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I have put that in Nikia. I've seen it played against me in a Selvala Heart of the Wilds deck.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it just played in a deck that runs green. Doesn't matter if you have a lot of green.
Yep. I've got mine in my Yeva deck.
Do you need mana? Let me introduce you to Nyxbloom Ancient.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Nyxbloom Ancient.
This is either the most expensive Swords to Plowshare absorber in the world, or you're untapping and doing something ungodly ridiculous.
Yeah. 3 times. And it's any permanent, right? So you don't have to just tap mana. If you have a creature that taps for mana, or you have an artifact that taps for mana, or you have an enchantment that somehow has the ability to tap for mana, or...
That probably exists somewhere.
There's got it. There's an interaction that makes it so you tap a permanent and you can get mana, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What else? Want to tap a planeswalker for mana. Tap a permanent you control, get a mana. Well, I tap my Elspeth and I get white mana.
If you tap and sacrifice the permanent for mana, do you get triple that mana?
Well, it says if you tap a permanent for mana. I would assume so.
So if you sacrifice a treasure, do you get 3 manas?
Judge?
Judge.
Judge?
Judge.
That's a good question. If you know the answer, we'll look it up. But if you know the answer...
Tweet it.
Tweet it at...
Us.
Ancient treasures. Hashtag ancient treasures.
Hashtag ancient treasures.
The next card that I have that is... Actually, let's do an underperformed.
Let's do an underperform.
Nyx Lotus.
Yeah, it enters tapped.
It enters tapped. If it didn't enter tapped, I would be happy with it. So mm-hmm. Nyx Lotus is an artifact that has Nyx Lotus enter the battlefield. It costs 4 mana. It enters the battlefield tapped. 4 generic. Tap, choose a color. Add an amount of that color to your mana pool equal to your devotion of that color. So you count up the individual pips, the little bubbles for each color, and you get that much mana.
Yeah.
It comes in tapped. No, thank you.
Comes in tapped. It's removable.
Very easily with being an artifact.
Yeah, it's not a land. It's not Shrine to Nyx. People aren't going to play land Destro all the time.
Destro? So.
Destro. It's like a bistro, but it takes away your lands.
Destro...
Yeah.
Action.
So yeah, it's
nope.
It's frankly an inferior card to Shrine to Nyx. Nykthos.
Well, they're different cards, but
they are. But
one comes down and you don't have to pay mana for it.
Uh-huh.
And it taps for generic.
That's why I call it inferior.
Another card that I thought it performed just as well as I thought it would, and I'm not sure if we mentioned this when we were talking about cards a couple of months ago, is Destiny Spinner. So Destiny Spinner is really good in creature decks. I'm trying to pull up Destiny Spinner right now, and I am not finding it right in front of me.
It's there. You just have to look harder.
I can't control find. It's frustrating me. Destiny Spinner. Okay, right here. So it's a 2/3 for 1 and a green enchantment creature human with enchantment or creature and enchantment spells you control can't be countered.
Yep.
So that's nice. I mean, there aren't a ton of counters in Commander that are going to counter a creature, but I mean, in many cases they're countering something bonkers, and I guess it could be a creature, but mm-hmm. this makes it so they can't. And then it also has three and a green, target land you control becomes an XX elemental creature with trample and haste until end of turn, where X is the number of enchantments you control. It's still a land.
Mm-hmm.
So I play this in both my Estrid the Masked enchantment deck that plays creatures and enchantments, and then I play it in my Nikia of the Old Ways deck. I think it's just decent if you're worried about getting countered with a creature deck as well. And it only costs two.
Yeah.
You know, it's two for one, two mana for a 2/3 that has a lot of stuff tacked onto it. It's not bad.
For sure.
I wouldn't say it's overperforming. I don't think I've actually, well, I guess I don't know if it has, because no one said I would have countered that thing if you didn't have Destiny Spinner.
Right.
But it feels good. It makes me feel better having it out when I go, I'm going to cast this creature.
I cast this creature. Hold up. No, it resolves. You just interrupt the person. No, it resolves.
Yeah.
I think an overperforming card that I found is Heliod's Punishment. For one and a white, an enchantment aura, it says enchant creature, Heliod's Punishment enters the battlefield with four task counters on it. Enchanted creature can't attack or block. It loses all abilities and has tap, remove a task counter from Heliod's Punishment. Then if it has no task counters on it, destroy Heliod's Punishment. The reason I say this card is overperforming is because when you cast this on someone's commander, typically if you're going to cast removal or an exile enchantment effect on someone's commander, they're just going to have the ability to recast it. This shuts down someone's commander for four turns, which is, and they unless they have an ability to sacrifice it or something, the commander's not doing anything for four turns.
Yeah.
So you can shut down someone's deck for four turns. It could be enough for you to get back in the game. It could be enough for you to win the game. But yeah, this two mana enchantment, although it doesn't look like it's permanent removal, because it's not, it's actually sometimes even better than a permanent removal on someone's commander.
Yeah, that card has been played against me. I haven't played against that in commander yet, but I've lost to that in draft many times, where the one thing that I needed to be able to block or attack or activate an ability. Mm-hmm. So like all the things it does.
You know, the things that
you know,
do
it just
things.
Takes multiple turns to do it. And I didn't have the cards that untap a permanent. So mm-hmm. I really had to wait a full four turns. Well, I guess I'm waiting.
Yeah.
An overperformer, and this is probably just because of the deck that I have it in, but I have felt that Archon of Sun's Grace has done a lot of work. So mm-hmm. it's a 3/4 Archon that for 2 white with flying and lifelink, it says Pegasus creatures you control have lifelink. And it also has Constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, create a 2/2 Pegasus creature token with flying that has lifelink. Well, it doesn't have lifelink, but it has lifelink because of your Archon.
Right.
So this was really good in Estrid, and I've won more games with Estrid than I've ever won. You know, when you make like 7 Pegasus,
yeah,
and you're gaining a lot of life, and if they don't have removal for this Archon, you're gonna get there.
Oh yeah.
But it's really good in Limited as well. Like, you can see obviously that anything that's gonna make creatures like this is really good in a Limited format, but I felt that it's really good in Commander. Not sure if everyone else has. It does cost 4 mana, and then you need to do something after that. But
sure,
I like it a lot.
Yeah, as long as it fits to your theme. I don't see why not. One card I think is overperforming in the people who are playing the card, and this is, I do believe this card is being underplayed, is Dryad of the Elysian Grove. For 2 and a green, it's an enchantment creature, Nymph. It's a 2/4 that says you may play an additional land on each of your turns, and lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other types.
Yeah.
If you're playing Wayward Swordtooth, you need to be playing Dryad of the Elysian Grove. They cost the same amount of mana. They both allow you an extra land drop, but this one fixes all of your mana, where Wayward Swordtooth just eventually gives you a 5/5 once you have 10 permanents on the battlefield. This is a 2/4. It almost has the same butt. But this can attack and block the turn it comes out, no matter how many it doesn't have haste, but it can attack and block the same turn it comes out, no matter if you have the 10 permanents or not. So Dryad of the Elysian Grove needs to be played in more lands matter decks. If you play Wayward Swordtooth, you need to play Dryad.
Yeah. I put that into my Jota deck, my 5 color deck, but I haven't cast it yet. So I have no experience with it yet.
Right.
A card that's performing well I guess I don't know if I would say that we thought it would perform well or if it wouldn't be good, but Clothis, God of Destiny, is very good as a commander, and I play this in Nikki of the Old Ways, and it's done work against decks that care about their graveyard or they need just one card in there. So it's an indestructible god, 4/5 for one red green. As long as your devotion to red and green is less than 7, it's not a creature. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, exile target card from a graveyard. Can be yours, can be an opponent's. Mm-hmm. If it was a land, you add red or green. Otherwise, you gain 2 life, and Clothis deals 2 damage to each opponent. So I have seen this I've seen this as group select deck with 2 different people now.
Yep.
So I know that Commander's Quarters did a video on their version of a group select deck. I've seen the non-budget versions now. Mm-hmm. I just played against one with Dictate of the Twin Gods, and it had Sulfuric Vortex, and it had Clothis, and it had cards that there's a card that has only untap one creature, and it wasn't one of the stacks cards. It was like red. I can't remember what the card was called. But Clothis with Dictate of the Twin Gods probably did 10 damage to each of their opponents that game, just 10 alone off of just picking picking a specific card from a graveyard and exiling and saying, well, you lose 4 now because of my Dictate of the Twin Gods. That's doubling the damage dealt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I think Clothis is good, and it's only 3 mana.
Yeah, that's
cheap. And it just sits there, and it's scary.
And it's indestructible.
It is indestructible. You have to bounce it,
yep,
or make someone sacrifice an enchantment, I guess, if that's their only enchantment. But picking out cards of a graveyard one by one is detrimental to cards or decks that want 1 or 2 cards in their graveyard.
Oh, yeah.
I started playing more graveyard-based decks recently, which I'm sure you were proud of me for.
I'm so proud.
And I saw Clothis come down, and I was like, well, I guess I'm not winning this game because I have to either reanimate or dredge, and they're going to get rid of my dredge card or the creature that I'm going to reanimate. So I'm out of luck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to wait for this one, but since it seems to be on theme, are you playing black and you don't like enchantments? You're not playing Fyreka's Libation, and you need to be playing Fyreka's Libation. It doesn't sound good. I swear to you, though, people, most of the time, if they're playing some graveyard hate, will only have one enchantment out. And Fyreka's Libation is 2 in a black that says choose one. Target opponent sacrifices a creature. Target opponent sacrifices an enchantment. So it's a modal card. It's not it's not a dead card if someone doesn't have an enchantment, because you can make them sacrifice a creature. It's instant speed, so you can keep it up. And if there's one thing black lacks, it's artifact removal and enchantment removal. And it straight up did not have enchantment removal pretty much before this card. So
straight up, now tell me, do you want to cast that card forever?
I do. So Fyreka's Libation, it's a killer. I think you should play it.
Yeah. Thassa's Oracle exists, so I don't really want to talk a ton about this.
Bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, if you're on Twitter or if you have Facebook or you exist,
mm-hmm,
and play Commander, mm-hmm, someone has told you this card is really good. I have lost to it a few times now, even when it's not being played with Flash Hulk or something. It's just,
yeah,
I'm going to mill, I'm going to do this, I'm going to bounce, whatever. It's just really good. You've seen a lot on it. I don't know if we necessarily...
I just want to put one thing out there. If someone plays Thassa's Oracle and you think they're about to Demonic Consultation, I recommend playing a card where it says target player draws a card, because after they exile their library and Thassa's Oracle's trigger on the stack,
yep,
make them draw a card, they lose the game.
Yep.
Do it.
That's all I have to do. Give them your opt. Give them your brainstorm. yeah. So Thassa's Oracle has overperformed.
Over.
I have one in a deck, but I haven't used it. So
I have one in like 3 different decks.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Oh well. Oh, you mean? Have you won off of it yet?
I've won with it a few times. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't even played the decks very often. It's the deck already had Laboratory Maniac win condition. Thassa's Oracle is just a more efficient Laboratory Maniac in a lot of cases. Not every case.
I have it in my Lazav the Multifarious deck, which has now Thassa's Oracle, Laboratory Maniac, Jace Wielder of Mysteries.
Right.
So it has 3.
But would you consider Laboratory Maniac the best of them because Lazav can turn into it? And turning into the Oracle doesn't get you the...
They're all good, but sure, Lazav at least gives me my fourth Lab Maniac, assuming that I can turn into it and it stays it permanently. If they exile it, I can, in response, turn it into it, and then he sets on the battlefield.
Right.
Then it can't change into something else, though, until I win.
That's true.
But for that deck, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I do have Mesmeric Orb and Basalt Monolith in there now, so I can tap it and then untap it and mill my entire deck.
Right.
And then... Fast's Oracle would be best in that.
If you had it in hand.
If I had it in hand.
Right.
Jace Wilder Mysteries on the battlefield.
Fair.
I
have one more underperforming card.
Okay.
Gravebreaker Lamia. 4 and a black enchantment creature, Snake Lamia.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. So 4/4 lifelink. When Gravebreaker Lamia enters the battlefield, search your library for a card. Put it in your graveyard, then shuffle your library. Spells you cast from your graveyard cost one less to cast. This card just screams Muldrotha. But it's 5 mana, and it's just too expensive for the Muldrotha deck. You can't do much and this card. And that's the problem.
Just do it next turn. Muldrotha casts everything the next turn.
As long as both your Muldrotha and your Gravebreaker Lamia stay on the field.
You just reanimate everything in Muldrotha. It doesn't matter, right?
So hopefully.
You reanimate the Muldrotha, and then you cast a spell from your graveyard that turn to reanimate the Lamia.
Well, as long as it's a permanent...
I guess you're right.
Yeah, and that's and that entails the problem. I mean, you can... the one good thing about Gravebreaker Lamia is no matter if... Even if it does get removed, if it enters the battlefield, you do get to throw something else in your graveyard. So you get maybe a little bit extra value, but 5 mana to throw something in your graveyard is not very good.
No. I would think that it would be. I have no experience with this card. I wanted to build a Muldrotha deck, and I have a foil Gravebreaker Lamia. That's the only reason I wanted to build Muldrotha, because I had a foil Gravebreaker Lamia.
I mean, throw it in and prove me wrong. Find a way to protect it, and prove me wrong.
You want to do a pick one, pack one?
With that pack sitting right there,
we have an Hour of Devastation pack this week.
Woo, woo.
It was Coil's first plane.
Woo, 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 woo. Pyramids, zombies, Egyptian theme,
gods.
Love them gods. When people talked about gods, I was like, oh, you mean like Kefnet? Like, no, not Kefnet, like Purphoros. I get to open it?
Sure.
Oh my gosh.
I want to open another Capsize Invocation.
That's how you know there's an invocation inside.
It's only squeaky if there's an invocation.
So if you hear us cut, just know that we didn't open a pack of our devastation at all.
It's because Coil will be screaming.
I don't actually know what invocations you can get in our... I know that in Amonkhet you can get Force of Will. My first booster box I ever opened of Amonkhet, I opened a Force of Will invocation, and that's when I started playing Magic Gathering.
I think in Hour of Devastation you can get... I think the only reason I know about Capsize is because I have one, and mm-hmm. I think it's because you... And I and one other person split a case of Hour of Devastation.
Yep.
I got one box from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you ended up doing like 4, right? I think you got 4 of the boxes.
I think I did 2 and 2, someone else did.
And someone else did 2 or 3.
Oh, maybe I did 3 and the other person did 2. No, I might have done 4. I don't remember.
But I got my box. And so at that time, I think I opened them all and I sent them a text. And I was like, look at this invocation. They were like, F, we're not getting one then.
Pretty much. So are we doing pick for commander, or are we doing pick one for draft?
Let's do pick one, pack one as if we drafted.
Okay. First off, we have Firebrand Archer. 1 and a red. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Firebrand Archer deals 1 damage to each opponent. And it's a 2/1 human archer. Absolutely love that card.
I do too.
All right, we got Aerial Guide for 2 and a blue, creature Drake 2/2 flyer. Whenever Aerial Guide attacks, another target attacking creature gains flying until end of turn. Flyers are always good. We've got Disposable Mummy for 2 and a white, creature zombie jackal. When Disposable Mummy enters the battlefield, exile target card from an opponent's graveyard, and it's a 2/3. Exiling from graveyard kind of important in the Hour of Devastation sealed and draft environment. Oasis Ritualist, 3 and a green, 2/4 Naga Druid.
Tap to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Tap and exert Oasis Ritualist to add two mana of any one color to your mana pool. And exert means you put an exert counter on it and it doesn't untap on the next untap. Instead, you remove the exert counter. Kenra Eternal for one and a black. It is a 2/2 zombie jackal warrior. It has afflict one. And afflict is whenever this creature becomes blocked, defending player loses X life, where X is your afflict. Rampaging Hippo, 4 green-green for a 5/6 hippo. It has trampling and it has cycle. So a big top end beater with trample and the ability to cycle it in case it is too early or it does not useful. Traveler's Amulet for 1 generic. It's an artifact and you can pay 1 generic and sacrifice Traveler's Amulet. Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
I think that's in standard in Theros Beyond Death right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I think I played it yesterday because I was playing a sacrifice deck.
It's good for mana fixing. Striped Riverwinder for 6 and a blue. It is a 5/5 serpent that has hexproof and cycling for a blue. That card's actually played in Living End.
Which one? I'd say that it's
Striped Riverwinder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. Desert of the Indomitable, our first desert land. Desert of the Indomitable enters the battlefield tapped. It taps for a green, or you can cycle it for a generic and a green. Ooh, I like this. Okay. Ruin Rat for 1 and a black. It is a 1/1 rat with death touch, and when it dies, exile target card from an opponent's graveyard.
So you can exile those cards that have... Eternalize.
Is it Eternalize? Maybe we'll get a card.
They're the Eternals.
They are Eternals, but you mummify. They get mummified. All right, first uncommon. Magmaroth for 3 and a red. It's a 5/5 elemental. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a -1/-1 counter on Magmaroth. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, remove a -1/-1 counter from Magmaroth. Next uncommon, Steward of Solidarity for 1 and a white. You get a 2/2 human warrior that has tap, exert Steward of Solidarity, create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance.
I do like that.
That's a good card.
I do like that.
Our last uncommon is Ominous Sphinx for 3 blue-blue. It's a 4/4 Sphinx with flying. It says whenever you cycle or discard a card, target creature and opponent controls gets -2/-0 until end of turn.
So that's a really strong card.
Cycling was an archetype that you could build into when you were doing draft. And our rare, Hostile Desert, a land desert that taps for a colorless mana, or you can pay 2 generic, exile a land card from your graveyard. Hostile Desert becomes a 3/4 elemental creature until end of turn. It's still a land.
Okay.
I think it's a little underwhelming for a rare. I wouldn't go for the rare in this.
No invocation?
No invocation. We got an island and a Champion of Wits token. Zombie, Naga, Wizard, token creature.
Is that the Eternalized one?
Yeah. Token.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the token. So the Eternalized is they come back as a 4/4, but they are white, right?
They're black.
Oh, they're black.
Eternalized is black. Yep. Okay. Pack one, pick one. I'm either going Firebrand Archer or Ruin Rat, depending on how I'm feeling that
day. I think
day.
I'm solid in our Sphinx.
You like the Ominous Sphinx?
I think I'm solid in a blue-white flyer deck, right? Maybe pick up a River Hoopoo. I think River Hoopoo is in Hour of Devastation.
It is.
Green-blue. Yeah.
It's uncommon, though. It's not guaranteed.
I'm going to force that Hoopoo.
Force the Hoopoo.
We will put these in a pile with our giveaways, and we'll be doing Patreon giveaways soon. So sign up and you can be part of those for, like we said, as little as $1 a month.
Whoop, whoop.
Commander of the Week. It's my turn this week.
It's your turn to do Commander of the Week this week.
It is my turn. We're going to do Vorl of the Hulklade.
Abs for days.
Honestly, though, it's ridiculous.
You can do that when someone just like makes your body for you, like the Simic.
Yeah, when they, you know, you're just gonna, the Guardian Project, you're like, this one, we're just gonna put some abs on this one. You can also have some fins or something.
Yeah, on
you
your
can
face.
Breathe underwater or something on your face.
Fins on your face, but we're gonna give you 20 abs. Deal.
So Vorrel of the Hullclade is a 1/4 for 1 green blue for a legendary human merfolk that has one, or pay green and blue, tap it for each counter on target artifact, creature, or land. Put another one of those counters on that permanent. Okay?
Yes.
So this deck that is not zooming out for me right now.
Zoom in on it.
Right? Consists of playing counters on permanents. So you're really doubling your counters, right? For each one, you're putting another one on. So we have a couple of win cons that I'm going to start out with. Darksteel Reactor. For 4 generic mana, it is an artifact with indestructible that says at the beginning of your upkeep, you can put a charge counter on Darksteel Reactor. When Darksteel Reactor has 20 counters on it, you win the game. 20 or more counters.
I was about to ask that.
20 or more, not just 20. But this is instant. As soon as it has 20, you win. You're not waiting for an upkeep. You're not waiting for an end of turn. It's just when it has 20, you win.
Cool.
And it's indestructible, so you have to exile this.
Right.
Or force me, I guess, to sacrifice an artifact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have another win con in an enchantment. Simic Ascendancy. So it is for green and blue. You can pay 1 green and blue to put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. This is an enchantment. And it says whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are put on a creature, you may put that many growth counters on Simic Ascendancy. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, if Simic Ascendancy has 20 or more growth counters on it, you win the game.
Mm-hmm,
so almost identical to the Darksteel Reactor.
But just not indestructible.
Not indestructible. And it's an enchantment that costs, you know, colored mana.
Right.
But you can put counters on your creatures with this, which the deck needs,
mm-hmm.
because they don't always come in with counters on them. So this deck is probably one of two decks that cares about an artifact in it. Astral Cornucopia.
Oh, yeah.
This and Atraxa likes Astral Cornucopia.
Yeah, yeah.
So Astral Cornucopia cost XXX.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 mana for 1
mm-hmm.
Is pretty much how you play this card. I guess you can pay 6 for 2, but it's not that great.
Depends what turn it is, I guess.
I guess. But it has Astral Cornucopia enters the battlefield with X charge counters on it. So if you pay 3, you get 1.
Mm-hmm.
And you tap to choose a color, and you add 1 mana to your mana pool for each charge counter on it. So you can double the charge counters on this with Vorrel of the Hullclade. So you pay it on generally on 3 or 4.
Right.
And then you double it to 2, then 4, then 8. And once you start getting up towards 8, you have a lot of mana and you're likely changing route, not doubling it on that. But I guess you could, because you only get it of one color,
which is
the problem.
Right, right.
So there's a few other cards that are more unique, like Eternity Vessel. So 6 generic mana, it enters the battlefield with X charge counters on it, where X is your life total. Then it has Landfall. When you put a land into play, your life becomes the number of charge counters on Eternity Vessel. So if you play it and you're at 30 life, every time you play a land, your life is going to become 30. But if you double that with the Vorrel of the Hullclade, you play a land, your life total becomes 60.
That's pretty nice.
Or 120 or whatever it is that you decide to stop.
Yeah.
And doubling this at.
Never stop.
Yeah, never stop. So those are some of the unique cards here, right? So we're running a ramp package. We've got Cultivate, Green Sun Zenith, Rampant Growth, a few cards like that.
You play Green Sun Zenith?
I play Green Sun Zenith.
Okay.
Okay. 1,000-Year Elixir. Really good for this deck.
Yeah.
You may activate abilities of creatures you control as though they had haste. So Vorrel of the Hullclade has a tap ability. You can do it the turn that he comes in. I added the Great Henge, because when a creature comes in, you put a counter on it and you draw a card.
Heck yeah.
You also gain 2 life and get 2 green mana off that, and you're doubling counters on creatures' power, right? Or just on them. So their power is high enough that the Great Henge generally just costs green.
Yeah.
And not 7 green.
Yeah.
Staff of Domination, if you have one, really good. You can untap your commander by paying mana. And then I do run Magistrate Scepter in here. So
yes.
It is an artifact for 3 that has pay 4, put a charge counter on it, and then you can tap it and remove 3 charge counters to take an extra turn.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the ability to put charge counters on it and then double them multiple times, you might be able to take a bunch of turns in a row.
Oh, yeah.
We got some value creatures in here. One that has worked 2 times now, Lighthouse Chronologist.
Mm.
So it's a level up creature. You can double level up counters because it's any counter type on a permanent that you could double there. For 1 and a blue, it's a 1/3 with level up that says you may pay one blue and put a level up counter on this creature. When you have 4 to 6 counters on it, it's a 2/4. And when you have 7+ level up counters on it, it's a 3/5 that says, at the beginning of each end step, if it wasn't your turn, take a turn.
Yeah. So seems good.
So you take a turn every other turn. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. when it's the person who's going just before you, you take 2 turns in a row.
Yeah.
This is also called Path to Exile target.
Yeah. Number one.
that's its alternate name, yeah. right? Or destroy this.
Anything that says extra turns, exile.
Yeah. Master Biomancer, really good in this deck. Master Biomancer for 2 green blue. Each other creature you control enters the battlefield with the number of additional +1/+1 counters on it equal to Master Biomancer's power, and is also a mutant. Don't know if that's ever going to matter for me, but it is a mutant. So I guess if I have him out, I could play a tribal card.
Yeah.
But it's mostly for the counters.
A lot of people only play that card to get 2 extra +1/+1 counters on their creatures. Pump that guy up to be like a 10-10 yeah. or a 10-12. Get 10 counters on every creature that enters.
10 counters on every creature. So we're playing per Imaginative Rascal. It does partner with Toothy. I don't have a Toothy is the only reason it won't be in the deck list when you see this. But per has, if a counter would be put on a permanent, your team controls you mm-hmm. and just yourself in most cases.
Yep.
That many +1 of those counters will go on it. So you get more counters. Card draw in the form of Prime Speaker Zagana.
Oh, yeah.
When Prime Speaker Zagana enters the battlefield. So it's, I guess, 2 green, green, blue, blue for a 1/1. Seems real bad. Or is it? When Prime Speaker enters, she enters with X +1/+1 counters on her, where X is the greatest power among other creatures you control. So if you have like a 5/5, she's going to enter with 5 +1/+1 counters, entering as a 6/6. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When she enters, you draw cards equal to its power. So you draw 6. That's really good. But it could be sometimes like 15 or more.
Does that trigger resolve? Does the trigger see the power when the trigger goes on the stack or when the trigger resolves?
It enters with the counters.
Right, but the draw triggers.
It has to enter.
Oh, well, yeah, but it enters with, and then it says it enter when it enters, right?
Draw cards equal to its power.
So if you double the amount of counters on it after it enters the battlefield, does it is good the trigger question. On the stack?
I don't know.
Judge. We got 2 judge questions. Answer them both.
You're asking me questions that I can't answer yet because I've only played the deck like 8 times. Roelesque Apex Hybrid.
Heck yes.
The other card in our logo.
Oh yeah.
2 green green blue for a 4/5 flying trample human mutant. So this one's already a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
When Roelesque enters, put 2 +1/+1 counters on another target creature you control. When Roelesque dies, proliferate, then proliferate again. So proliferate is choose any number of permanents or players and give them another counter that they already have. So I can double the counters, I guess double on a 1/1, but put another counter yeah. onto a bunch of permanents.
Mm-hmm.
And just a bunch of value stuff. We got Yorvo from Throne of Eldraine. It enters with counters and it gets counters when you play a green creature.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Thrumming Bird when it deals damage to a player, proliferates. You can put more counters on stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Seedworm Use untaps crap.
Yeah, that seems really good.
Yeah.
Do you also play the enchantment that untaps only at the end of your turn?
Which one?
The one that is played in Standard. Right.
Oh, no, the untapping lands.
Yes.
No, Wilderness Reclamation.
Because it doesn't untap your permanent.
Yeah, it does not untap permanent, so it untaps that. I do also run Sage of Hours. I was a little worried that I wouldn't be able to target it. So Sage of Hours is a 1/1 human wizard for 1 and a blue that has heroic. So when you cast a spell that targets the creature, you do something. And Sage of Hours has, when you target it, you put a +1/+1 counter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has the ability, remove all +1/+1 counters from it. For every 5, take an extra turn. So I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get a counter on it. Turns out I have enough stuff to put counters on creatures that it still works without targeting it. Lots of blue-green lands.
Yeah.
Nothing real special other than Llanowar Reborn has Graft. So a lot of people don't know what Graft is. Llanowar Reborn enters with a +1/+1 counter on it. And then whenever a creature enters the battlefield, I can move that counter to that creature. So it's a way to get a counter on a creature real early. But it does enter tapped. Karn's Bastion allows me to proliferate.
Yep.
And then Manama, which we talked about today, allows me to pay one blue to untap my commander, which can tap to put counters on things. And then Renata, Call to the Hunt, a creature that power equal to my devotion to green, and then each other creature enters the battlefield with an additional counter on it. So it just gets counters on creatures right away. Doubling season.
Ooh.
So if an effect would put counters on, it puts double those counters. That's really good. Bread for the Hunt. Whenever a creature I control with a plus one counter on it deals damage to a player, I can draw a card. So that's pretty cool. And then I'm running Finale of Devastation. I'm contributing to the amount of decks that have Finale of Devastation in it.
Good for you.
Yeah. Underplayed? Not because of me. And then I think the final card is I run a Deep Glowskate because I'm really original.
But it works.
But Deep Glowskate really works.
You're supposed to do that.
I'm supposed to play it. So it's just put counters on things, mm-hmm. win with counters that are on the things, mm-hmm. sometimes win with counters that are on the non-creatures instantly.
Now, have you played against someone who dropped a Thief of Blood onto the board?
I have absolutely not done that.
Okay.
I would have told you, though.
Yeah, I'm sure I would have been very excited.
I guess I do have two Planeswalkers. Let me mention those.
Oh, yes. I was going to ask you about those.
Jiang Yingyu, Wildcrafter from War of the Spark. So each creature with a +1/+1 counter on it has tapped to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Mm-hmm. And I can put a counter on it by minus, and it comes in with 3 loyalty. And then I'm also playing Kiora, Master of the Depths, because she can untap a permanent in a land. So she comes in for 2, a green and a blue with 4 loyalty, has a +1 to untap one target creature and one target land. So I can untap my commander and potentially the Manamo, tap my commander with mana, and then untap it again with Manamo.
Gotcha.
But I did ultimate Kiora a couple of weeks ago. I don't think I'm supposed to. I don't think I was supposed to. You get an emblem with whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may have it fight target creature. And then I put 3 8/8 octopus creatures onto the battlefield.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
So I do get to fight 3 things immediately. And then when my stuff enters, I have the ability to fight. It does say may. But there was nothing else really going on, and I had no other option. Like, my commander had been killed, I think, 2 times. I had nothing in hand. I said, well, let's make some octopus.
Might as well.
I ended up losing after ultimating, but I did get to put the emblem that I do have on the battlefield.
And 3 8/8 octopi.
But octopuses. I did not have those tokens, so I made them out of our tokens.
Oh, okay, perfect.
So this deck's really fun. Well, I'll post the deck list for it later. If you have a Voral deck or a counter deck, let me know. And I am working on getting a Toothy. It's just no shop near me has one, and I'm trying to buy it at a local
game shop. I don't want to trade you one because I don't want to unpair one of my peers from its Toothy.
Well, it feels bad because I play peer and I can't tutor for the Toothy. So
if you just pretend you have a Toothy, that's
you can shuffle your deck.
I would say, what if you pretend you have it? It's very on flavor because it's just imaginative.
Imaginative rascal.
Well, Pierre's the imaginative rascal. Toothy is the imaginary friend.
That's true.
So you just pretend you have it.
I'm imagining it's there. Yeah. But I couldn't find him.
Okay.
Couldn't find him. Yeah. So that's that deck.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at GuardianPod. You can find me at AT Flory.
You can find me at WormCoilEngine.
Also, take a look for #GuardianProjectPod to find our posts and episodes. We like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over those on the next episode.
Whoop, whoop.
You can also email us at GuardianProjectPod@gmail.com. Why am I talking so fast right now?
It's the coffee. I feel like Starbucks.
I have a strawberry acai refresher tonight.
Is there caffeine in that?
There is caffeine.
Because I couldn't even repeat back to you what you just told
but
me.
But I get it with no berries.
We were going...
Because I don't want like loogie strawberries in my drink. Because that's what they end up being. It's disgusting.
We were going over this at the counter at Starbucks. Like, I have the most extra drink in the world. It's like, oh, and I have the most basic. I just drink black coffee.
So I get there and I order Ryan a grande cappuccino. And mm-hmm. I go, can I have a venti strawberry acai refresher with no berries? And then Coyle's like, can I get a venti black coffee with like 3 ice cubes?
Yeah, I need it cooled down slightly for me. It's too spicy when it comes right out of the nozzle.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you all for listening. And we won't see you at Magic Fest Detroit.
Sad.
Yeah, I am sad. But we'll be streaming still every Wednesday. So come hang out with us there. And then we'll find another event in the future. Like maybe if this is gone or hopefully clearing up before KubeCon,
yeah,
which is coming up in a while, maybe we can get over there to that and see some folks there.
Cool,
anyway,
cool.
Have a nice night and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Do you have any special name for your Vorl of the Hulkblade deck?
Not yet. No, it's just Vorl of the Hulkblade.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Vorl of the Swoleclade.
Are you proud of yourself right now?
I'm very proud of myself.
I need to find better names for my decks. I don't have any punny names for those.
I only make a deck if I can think of a punny name.
Otherwise, you can't make it.
Right. Although, Dejiru with sunglasses is not a pun.
I also don't think it's Dejiru. I think it's just Juru.
But there's a D.
I think the D is silent.
The D will be prominent.